What are you missing? Welcome to MCDC, the podcast for April the 22nd, 2024. Joined by my fellow comrades and ministry leader, Sandy Schrey.
Hello.
Welcome, Sandy. And joined by one of our congregants, mentors, wise, Miss Esther Hamilton.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you. We should do that little clapping sound on there. You know how to do that? Yeah. Our producer.
Jesus. We never use these.
You use it. There it is. Yeah, we can't hear it, but it did it, Miss Esther. They just clapped for hopefully. You. So hopefully it wasn't like boo. Well. So yes, so we are beginning tonight a new segment on our podcast. We want to call Legacy Talks. We had a little brief intro on Sunday in our worship service where we had a member break down some history from Mount Zion, our church, from his family, his wife's family, different things like that. And so what we want to do with Miss Esther is just find out, get to know her. We know her. I know her probably the best in the room. And I don't even know her that well, and I know her better than you guys. And so we get to know her, just ask some questions, conversate about walking with God and living life and how those different things impact up until this day. And so, Miss Esther, will you just kind of give us just a brief intro? Who are we? Where are we from?
Well, I'm the second of nine children to Curvis and Jeanette Eisler. So I think that's important because when you come from a somewhat large family, it tends to mold you in ways that you're not even aware of.
Yeah.
So I think that's important. And I think the next thing that's important is that I love the Lord. I am a believer, and I try very hard to live each day with that foremost, mm-hmm. not only in my mind, but in my behaviors mm-hmm. too. I enjoy people, and because you do enjoy people, you tend to talk a lot. But I hope to temper that with praying more, so it's okay.
Yeah.
I tried not talking, and it just didn't work. It was almost like being disobedient.
Yes.
I'm from a small town compared to other cities and other places and compared to here in Georgia, mm-hmm. Niagara Falls, New York. And I lived there my whole life, and I never had any intentions of leaving until my husband started shoveling snow when he shouldn't. And so I said, well, I need to go someplace where there's no snow. And we have a daughter here, and this is where we wound up.
Yes.
I have a sister who was visiting me. I was going through some health issues, and she's famous for looking things up online. And she found this church and another church. And she said, well, that one's right up the street from me. And so we attended. We came to this church the first day, and I won't call last names, but Paula directed mm-hmm. us here, showed us when we got on campus, and we've been here ever since. And the word is preached, and our philosophy is simple. If the word is being preached, don't run away, because you'll find yourself wherever you go. So stay where the word is, and you'll be all right.
I think, thank you. I think along the way tonight, we're going to hear some little sayings that you could probably write down and use later in life. that's one of them. Wherever you go, there you can find yourself. There you are, right mm-hmm. there. I agree. So what, nine children?
Yes.
You're second to the youngest?
Oldest.
Okay, so, mm-hmm. yeah. I have two younger brothers and a younger sister, so three younger siblings. So mm-hmm. I know on the small scale, that like what you learned in that, but what is it like around nine? That scene, I know four was chaotic for my parents.
For your parents,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah, I thought a good time,
yeah, yes, right. I thought you were gonna say for the children.
No.
Well, I think one of the things that you learn in a positive way is that you learn that people are different,
yeah.
even your siblings are different. You learn to stick together and to support one another, mm-hmm. but you also know that you're different. And in order to be a cohesive unit as a family, you have to learn to adapt to those differences. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. it isn't just because I was second oldest that I could be in charge. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't work that way. So you had the children, nine different personalities, basically,
mm-hmm.
and you had to adapt to that. Different
mm-hmm.
personalities, different emotions, a way of expressing themselves, abilities. Mm-hmm. And our family is unique in that it runs the gamut from those who are definitely gifted to those who had special needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so special needs was a term that came up later in life, but for most of the individuals our age, you took care of family.
Yeah.
There was no such thing as, okay, well, they have to go here or go there. And so, you know, mm-hmm. you learn a lot. You mm-hmm. learn to share. You mm-hmm. learn to love. I can go on and on.
All qualities that you apply to church life and Jesus.
Absolutely.
Just like,
because they came from him.
Yeah.
They came from him. You just didn't do this by yourself. Wake up one morning and say, I love you, Keithy. You know, who is the brother unto me? You know, but it was him. And my parents, because they knew the Lord mm-hmm. and lived a life. Many, many times my siblings and I will say, we are blessed beyond measure. And we did mm-hmm. not know how blessed we were until mm-hmm. we were adults growing up
yeah.
and realized. I thought everybody called their mother every day. I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, that's yeah. what I would say, especially as you got older and your parents got older. You still respected them when I was older and got married, even when I was in school. When I went to their house, I would knock on the door because that's their home. I'm no longer there. So even though you're their child, mm-hmm. and they'll remind you of that, you know, you don't go barging into their home,
yeah.
you know. So different little things.
I love that. Our upbringing was vastly different growing up in church as you mm-hmm. did. Parents, long-time believers, like they just your whole life, that's what it was? Just
yeah, basically. Yeah,
just, mm-hmm. And you went to Sunday school, you went to
oh,
church,
yes.
you went
mm-hmm.
to Wednesday
mm-hmm.
night, you
mm-hmm.
went to...
Mm-hmm. We didn't have to go out to go. Just like this couch here, the lady sat on the couch and we sat on the floor. And that was how prayer meeting was.
Oh, I love it.
And you would be there every Saturday. There was no, I had to go here, I had to go there. You had to go to prayer meeting. And so it was just natural for
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that my parents forced us to do anything, but they lived a life that you wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
You know, involved in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We weren't perfect by no means.
Of course. You know. Of course. Yeah, Sandy?
That's cool.
Yeah. So what your upbringing was in church, right? You said that when we had the Easter thing, like you went to a lot of
yeah,
church growing up?
Yeah, I did, but not my whole immediate family are believers.
Okay.
Like my parents, I would say, are not believers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't religiously go to church. Mm-hmm. My mom goes to like a Seventh-day Adventist
mm-hmm.
church, so
mm-hmm.
it's not the same
yeah.
belief
mm-hmm.
as I have, but... I do come from a big family as well,
okay.
so I can relate
yes.
to
mm-hmm.
like what you're talking about with the whole family dynamics. And my mom was actually one of eight, too.
Okay.
So big family. so I definitely can relate to what you're saying about learning from your siblings
mm-hmm.
and your parents and your aunties and your uncles and all of that. But the whole church, we didn't really
yeah.
connect with that.
Well, my father was an only child. And somewhere along the line, we think he just wanted some more siblings, you know, and he just had us. But, yeah, he was an only child. And I grew up in a situation where you all might have heard of it, but you might be too young to know, the five-day Bible clubs that they used to have on the porches.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, I know.
No, ma'am.
I know you don't.
Nope.
But it's all right. But
we need to bring that back, though, because you talked about
it. Oh, yes,
right, so
that's right.
That
you know, they would go through the neighborhood and, you know, ask for volunteers, and if you knew the Lord, then you would volunteer your porch, and every day from, like, for, like, a two-week period, you'd
uh-huh.
have a Bible club on your porch from
okay.
10 to, you know, 12
that's
or something
cool.
like that. And then, you know, you should know something about child evangelism. You may have heard that
mm-hmm.
term.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, again, another ministry where they would come into your neighborhood and pick you up and take you to a local church. So
mm-hmm.
we were involved in all those things. And my mother, and that's why I think we're so mission-minded, was mission-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think my mother traveled 200 miles out of the state, you know, except for vacations or something. But she had a love for
yeah.
Those, and she would minister, you know. It was nothing. A large family, you know, you really, if you get a second helping, that's kind of
mm-hmm.
nice.
Mm-hmm.
But it was nothing for her to say, well, somebody's coming over for dinner or
mm-hmm.
we have to supply to somebody
mm-hmm.
else.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What did your father do to take care of...
What did my father take care of?
What did he do to take care of
oh,
me?
Oh,
well,
my father is very, it's kind of special. He took what you call correspondence courses mm-hmm. for years. Mm-hmm. He worked in a factory, mm-hmm. but he wanted to be an engineer. And if you look at me, you know that schools weren't necessarily available to us for those things. And yeah. so he took correspondence courses. And he was successful in passing those courses. Mm-hmm. And he finally wound up being an engineer, an electrical engineer. And so he went from there, because while he was working on the correspondence courses, he was doing construction. He worked as a janitor in schools. His name was Eisler, but they called him Ike. And he would help many children. In his education, he had to learn Latin. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, he thought that we would just be dying to learn it too. But we weren't dying to learn it, but we had to learn it. You okay. see, and he was great at math. And so he would make sure we mm-hmm. knew math and the concept. So he was very involved in our education and work, making us understand the value of mm-hmm. work, the mm-hmm. value of work, good work. And so you also, excuse me for all you who don't believe in it, but he did believe in giving you a spanking, as did my mother. Right. And if you did something wrong, my mother didn't have any problem spanking you mm-hmm. or chastising you. Mm-hmm. But then when he came home, her name was Jeanette. He called her Nettie. He'd say, Nettie, how was your day? And if she said, well, that was all right. But if she called your name after that, you were going to get another punishment, which is usually another little spanking.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sandy, but it was okay. Because you didn't get the spanking for the same thing. You got the spanking for upsetting his wife.
Oh.
See, so that put a understanding in, you know, your life yes. that... mm-hmm.
I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
I so. Love that. So you briefly mentioned, what time frame are we talking about? Because you said it wasn't available, that things weren't available to me at that time. That was around what year?
Well, I graduated high school in 64.
Okay, so very trying times in our country.
Yes,
like,
exactly. Yes. From 40, and I was born in 46. I mean, I'm 77. You can do the math. And that's another thing. I don't mind saying my age because it's all from the Lord.
I love it.
So, you know, what's the alternative, you know? I want to live to be 100 if I'm in my right mind and I'm, you know, uh-huh. not a burden to anybody.
Yes.
But it's the only thing, I was just talking to the ladies about this today, it's the only thing that if I lose, I win. Because if I don't live, I'm going to heaven.
Yeah.
So how do you lose that, you know?
I love that.
Yeah, you don't lose.
Oh, that's one.
Yeah, you get those.
Well, no.
Write these things
yeah,
down.
Yeah,
it's good
yeah.
stuff. Uh-huh. So what was Niagara Falls in that time? Because I've
only
been
it was an industrial.
Industrial,
yeah.
okay.
Oh, many, many industries. You might remember learning about Love Canal, but that's where all that chemical was and leached into the ground and people were dying and so on and so forth. And it was a chemical town because we were right on the river, the mm-hmm. Niagara River, and we had all that power. And, of course, we were dumping stuff. I mean, yeah. the DuPonts of the world, not me, the Carborundums of the world, you know. And they were dumping things into the water, which weren't nice. Mm-hmm. And so once, let's call it the EPA and everybody else got wind of it and decided to stop it, well, the town just about died, dried up.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's still a tourist attraction because the falls are there. And, you know, it's a... very nice place to go, both sides.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We've been yeah. there twice.
Yes.
I've been mm-hmm. there twice, mm-hmm. yes. And we've served the church there,
yeah.
Calvary.
Grace Calvary yes. Church, yes. Still in existence.
So how long were you at Grace Calvary?
Oh, my whole life.
After
child evangelism and, you know, the porch churches, yeah. Our parents, my parents, and my husband's mother, an aunt and another lady established that church.
Okay.
They prayed, the ladies prayed. Now, you don't, the Bible tells you men, you know, to take care of your wives and to be faithful and true to them, because a praying wife can do a lot, you mm-hmm. understand?
Mm-hmm.
And so those ladies got together and they prayed for that church. They prayed for the building. The church was a sale, and who had money? We didn't have no money. And so they prayed, and that church came into fruition.
Mm.
And because of that, they named it Grace Calvary. You know, there was mm-hmm. Grace at Calvary, mm-hmm. and so they named it Grace Calvary. And it's still standing today yeah. and serving.
Yes.
And serving. Yeah.
We've been there. We did revival, I guess is the word
yes.
that we would use
mm-hmm.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
Preaching in the park. Sandy, they had me go, and I was the youth pastor at the time, and there's a basketball court there, and there's a million young kids playing basketball, and here I am, Russell, in Niagara Falls. It was like, if, so everything Esther told you about, like, the way her skin portrayed her at a certain time in her life, picture the opposite me standing in front of these
Absolutely.
Young men. And I was not shaken by it, because I've just come from Mount Zion, where this is where we are, so I'm totally okay with who God made me, but... It was one of those moments where I'm like, ooh, okay, here we go. I talk in front of basketball players all the time, but not strangers and not kids that were, like, at a park just playing. And here comes this random guy going, hey, can I talk to you about Jesus real quick? They were very kind, though, and it was a really that was a huge moment in my life. Like, that whole trip, just watching everyone just go there and serve and be, and then meeting all your church members and people that were more like family members.
Yes, because, you know, small, a lot of times people get lost by choice if they choose in mega churches because nobody's going to bother them, you know, and you don't have to serve. But in a small church, you have to do everything. You have to be your custodian. You have to be the shopper. You have to spend your money right. You have to watch the children and so on and so forth. And so you get a chance to serve. A lot of times people make the mistake of going to a church and somebody will say, oh, you work in a bank? Well, you could be a good treasurer. Well, you know, if God didn't call you to be the treasurer, you're not supposed to do that. So in a small church, it isn't so much a title as how you serve. And that's what it, to me, should be about, how you serve.
Yeah.
How you serve.
You could get that sense the whole time we were there, very servant-minded, just everyone there that served us. That sounds like I'm cheesy, but I didn't mean to say it that way. But they were. The hospitality, driving, everything involved was a really cool thing. And so how would you, so going from Niagara Falls, early 60s, where it was rough, coming up in a big family where you're learning different personalities, mom and dad are obviously good parents that are trying to work and raise the family the right way. At what part did you know that you met Jesus in that journey? And
well, that's easy. You know, when this is for our producer here, too, to keep in mind. When you go off to college for the first year, when you come back Thanksgiving, you know everything.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes, you do. You wonder how you put up with these people who just didn't have sense of... Yeah, that's right. And I'm sure you went through that when your daughter came home to a degree. It's a sense of, whoa. What have you all been doing? You have no idea what life is about, you know what I'm saying? And so I came home that way.
Yeah.
And my brother, Russell, who had a stuttering, problem, and he was telling, now, don't forget, I've been to the five-day clubs, you know, and I know all about Jesus and everything, but he takes it upon himself to ask me if I'm saved, if I know the Lord, and so on and so forth. And we were in the kitchen, and my mother was cooking and everything. And I would say, oh, that's so sweet. It's so nice that you know the salvation plan, blah, 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 blah. And I went upstairs to go to bed. But when I went upstairs to lay down, I had this dream, and everybody in my house was going to heaven. And I was trying to reach for my mother's leg, but it kept going through.
Oh, no.
Well, when I woke up, I went back downstairs and asked Russell, what did you say? You know? And at that point, he's the one who actually led me to a conscious understanding of Christ and so on and so forth. I had been to 5-day clubs in school. We, you know, you got out on Tuesday to go to 5-day clubs, and bless her little heart, this little lady of your persuasion, she would, she'd be talking to us about Jesus, and we were just like, you know,
of course,
But I remember that was the first sense of the seriousness of it. But you know, it was when I was in high school and when I was in college, my freshman year.
So did that that's an interesting time to for that to happen. Like, did it change when you went back, like, perspective on?
Oh, yes, it did. Somebody had this conversation a while ago, or I heard it someplace, and people were saying, I think it was in Sunday school we were talking about it, that sometimes people think they don't have a testimony or they weren't saved from something. We were all sinners. See, we all are sinners, saved by grace. All right, so you are saved. You do have a testimony. It doesn't have to be, and I was on drugs, and I shot, and I killed. It doesn't have to be all that. It's that you didn't know Jesus. You were not perfect. You know, so.
Yeah, we've mentioned that on this podcast right here, like, because there are people who go to church here that have said that thing to me, like, oh, man, I don't really have a testimony. I don't
have,
I'm like,
do.
You actually have
yes,
a great
that's
one.
Right.
Like, God protected you from this.
That's
and this
right.
And
he kept you when you didn't even know you were being kept.
Yes,
that's right. So, yes, it did, because when I went back to school, I had a different sense of wanting to accomplish things. Mm. It wasn't that you were just trying to do it for yourself, mm-hmm. or just because they were giving A's. I had friends who used to tease me about, well, why do you feel you have to get an A? Well, my thinking at that time, before mm-hmm. I knew the Lord, was they're giving out A's. You know,
they're giving them out. Yeah,
that's right.
One.
Why shouldn't I get one? You know, especially when they give you a syllabus and tell you what it is. All right. So, but when I went back, I realized that I should be serving and working and loving for Christ mm-hmm. as I was doing it to Him. And you didn't. I didn't go back with that the next semester.
Of course,
You know, but you grew into that, and you grew into the love of Christ, which is never ending. Mm-hmm. Oh, the never ending. Mm-hmm. It never ends, and you never cease from growing and wanting to bring others to that point mm-hmm. of not being worried about situations, of not being, you know, because worry has a lot of worries. Oh, I'm not worried, I'm just concerned. I'm not worried, I'm just thinking about, you know, but you think about it all the time, you know what I mean? So you want to teach others to be content in what's up, the word says, in whatsoever state I find myself. Mm-hmm. And that's because Jesus never leaves us. He's always with us. Mm-hmm. That's his, because he said, cast it on me. You got a problem, cast it on me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it that changed. And I had a new attitude also when I was in school about what the purpose of school was. See, I was going to school at first because I did not like that my father had to work construction work and he had to walk home in the snow because people wouldn't give him a ride home. Mm-hmm. So I was going to get him.
I was going to get him. Vengeance.
Yeah, it was mine. I thought, you know, and then I had to read that, saith the Lord. It wasn't mine. But in those ways, now you didn't think of it as vengeance. You just thought about, well, I'm not going to do that to me. Yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But then you began to realize, again, the mercy and the grace of God, the goodness of God.
Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we experience this that in ministry, people are in survival mode. From what they've witnessed in their family and saw and are experiencing, kind of like seeing your dad go through that. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, no, I'm going to make it. Like, that's not going to happen to me. And and then we forget that we're not really controlling that. And then when we get over that, you see the way God has really controlled the whole thing and got you to that point. Yeah. And so once you, so you go back to school, not the next semester, but and what do you end up graduating and doing with that school?
Well, I have a kind of unique situation. Well, my life is unique, you know, made by God. But in that, I have all three of my degrees from the same institution.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and so my first degree was in speech pathology and audiology, and so within a year of that time, you could get your master's at that time. So I went ahead and got the master's.
Was that from growing up with your brother with the speech impairment?
No, that was just because I wanted to help people communicate.
Okay.
See, and so, you know, I did that. Don't forget, I was a talker when I was young. Okay. Too, so, yeah. So, and then, you know, I figured, okay, well,
I'm so good at it. I can help all these people talk.
It took me a while to realize some people don't want to talk, you know? And, you know, or like, you know, when you were in school, don't let me forget my thought, but when you were in school and had to give book reports, and, oh, some of the children, some of the students would panic. They just panicked. Like they had to, one time I told my girlfriend, I said, now listen, you get up there and you give that book report. You don't care whether they listen to you or not. The teacher's going to give you the grade. You know, just forget them. And she looked at me like, is that what you do? I didn't have the heart to tell her, I don't really care what you do. I'm trying to let this teacher hear what I read the book and so on and so forth. But anyways, that was my bachelor's and master's degree.
Okay.
And then I stopped and had a family and worked. And when my children, our children were in sixth and seventh grade, I went back to school for my doctorate, and I only went to school because I liked learning, and I figured, well, if you're going to learn, you might as well get something for it. Stop taking a course here and a course there and put them together. And so I got that in elementary and special ed, and, you know, went on.
Okay, awesome. There's some other stories about your schooling that I'd learned of that I would not have to share, but there's some more interesting stories that go into her schooling and how it got taken care of that are really cool and really good. So you did the schooling, and I had a little family, and then you moved on. But let's go back to that part.
Okay.
That little family. you met Brother Donald?
Yes.
Was he a high school sweetheart?
Oh, like heavens, no. The man was out of high school 13 years before I was even born.
Okay.
my husband is 13 years older than I am. And he was raised here down south in a little place called Pigeon Creek, Alabama.
Pigeon Creek, Bama.
Yeah. Now they have joined with Greenville, so they don't sound so country. Pigeon Creek. And I went down there at my first time after we got married at 27, at age 27. First time I had ever been down south.
Okay.
Because I knew it was not the place for me to grow up.
Right.
Okay, so leave that alone. So I met him at my sister's wedding. Someone dropped out of the wedding, and so she needed another groomsman. And his mother and my mother were very good friends.
Hmm.
And so his mother volunteered him. Now, Don, bless his heart, was not into weddings and nice little things. You know, he has an extensive education from what we would term the streets. And so he came, he served in that capacity. He would do that for his mother, you know, for his friends. So he did that. Well, I don't know what happened. There are a couple of things that are very humorous about that. But we were at the wedding, and we saw each other every day until the next April when we got married. And I'm going to tell you now, because I'm just talking, so I don't really care. It's the truth. I remember my sister said, ooh, could you like him? I said, this is what I said, y'all. I said, I'll give him a run for his money. Now, it's not that I had 1,000 dates, you know?
Right,
it was just an expression.
That's right.
And here comes God saying, yeah, you're going to give him a run, all right. You already caught, you understand? But Don, I tell people, as much as I knew what love was, I loved him. And I still love him.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't tell you, 13 years, did he graduate? Well, you have a college. I couldn't. Those things are worldly things. I don't try to address those.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are bold enough to ask me, I tell them to ask God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't have an answer for you. I just know I love the man. And it's been now April 3rd. It was 52 years we've been married.
Amazing.
52 years. So.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a soldier in the Army.
Oh, yeah. He was in.
Paratrooper?
Paratrooper. So. Well, we went across country on a vacation, and I was going to jump out the plane. And it was a cloudy day that day. Yeah, broke my heart. But Sandy, the thing was, after that, he told me he'd been praying since he heard about it, but he didn't tell me because he didn't want me to be mad all across the country.
Oh.
But he was praying. He said, "You jump out that plane and hurt yourself, and I'm way over here." So I forgave him.
And I think, if my recollection is correctly, two children?
Yes.
Two children, yes.
A son and a daughter.
Son and a daughter, yep. Mm-hmm. How far apart are they?
Just a year.
Just a year. Okay.
Yeah, my parents, would take in other children and would adopt, have adopted. And so in our family, we have also adopted as their children. We've adopted into our family. And so I used to say they're both children of the heart and one's a child of the womb. But they're both children of the heart.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And they both have their own little families. And
Donita doesn't have a family.
Okay, so you're her little.
Yeah, she
takes care of herself.
Yeah, she takes care of herself and me and her daddy. You know, it's at that age now where she, I just don't stop saying anything.
Awesome. Sandy, what are your thoughts on any of this? I'm just rambling on.
I'm just listening.
You're just taking it all in.
Yeah.
So I think one of the hardest things for Pastor Russell, I'm 46, which is always when I say I'm old, people like Miss Esther roll their eyes at me and tell me, you don't even know what you're saying and all this. So I tried to stop saying that. But I'm at that point in my life where, like you said, my daughter is a freshman in college and my son is a freshman in high school. And I've been the lead pastor for 3 years now. And so it's like you get to a point where you feel like people think you know more than you know you know, and you are in situations where your, I guess your faith is not put to the test, but your faith and ability to share it and encourage other people is being stretched to the limits at points.
Mm-hmm.
How in your life, knowing nine different relationships as brothers and sisters, godly mothers and parents growing up, but striving to like overcome the things of racial inequalities, like fueling you on, and then you meet Jesus and you're like, wait, it's way more bigger than this, and I have a whole nother passion now. How has that helped you in difficult times and in good times, just like along your whole journey, that foundation, like what does it do?
I think it's a long question, but the answer is simple. Sorry, yeah. No, don't be sorry, because I mean, it explains what the question is. I think the answer is that you have to realize that you're nothing, that you don't have the answer even when you think you have the answer. Mm-hmm. And when you think you have the answer, you're going to cause more havoc than what it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, sometimes we spend time when we haven't reached a certain level yet, we spend time trying to figure the situation out, trying to give an answer, instead of saying, I'll pray for you, or I don't know that, but I'm willing to pray. We have to admit that we don't know. It's all right to say we don't know. In a job situation that, you know, the majority of my life, whenever I've had people under me, the first thing I say to them is, you don't know everything, and I don't know all the situations that we're going to face. You feel confident when someone comes to the desk and say, well, I don't know, but I will research that for you and get back. That's what we as Christians should do. I don't know, but I know a God who does. And the more you trust God, the shorter your prayers become. Because you're not telling God, well, such and such and such, and well, you know, he did this, and no, she did that, and it's not working. Stop. You know? And so I think that what happens is, for me, I've learned that I have a lot of thoughts in my head. Lord, mercy, I have a lot of thoughts in my head. But I have to run them through the Lord, and I have to have people run them for me through the Lord.
It helps to have people to run thoughts through. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I have several people like that in my life I will send a text to and say, hey, can I say this? And they'll most of the time say no, but at least I got to say it to them, so I get it off my chest.
Right.
Can you think of or recollect like any time in your life that was like a major thing where you had to, like your faith was it, like you were, I'm in, God, this is you or it's not happening, like just anything. It could be job related, it could be a mom, husband, wife, all those things, just, or all of it.
Well, yeah, see, that's what I mean. I believe it's all of it.
All of it was one.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, you know, that you're older and you have children now, all right, who are your daughter in college. Growing up, yeah. And I remember saying to my son, our son, at 16, I said, well, now, you're 16. It's the first time you've been 16, and it's the first time that I've been the mother of a 16-year-old. So we're going to make mistakes, you know. Now, I could have said that at 13, 14, 12, and everything else, but at 16, he needed to hear that. And I said, but the reality of it is, we're the ones as parents who are going to have the final say, you understand? Now, when I said that, I didn't realize the seriousness of that. And I think, if truth be told, I went through 10 years of, Lord, what are you doing? Before he said, I'm doing what I'm doing. And when I got that peace, you understand, I was able to look back and say, how foolish were you? The Lord was there all the time, but that was the journey my son had to take. And the journey I had to take, and the journey everybody has to take, we can't judge everybody's journey, anybody's journey, because it's their journey from the Lord.
One of the things we've been going over recently is a study about Lord Changed My Attitude on Wednesday nights. And one of the things that he said in the first week, it was replace a complaining attitude. But he was saying, whatever your thing is, like whatever God has you going through, whether it's a 16-year-old or a parent of a 16-year-old or whatnot, he was like, that is the thing that God is using to grow your faith.
Yes.
And so instead of trying to, God, why? What is happening? And how can I get out of it? Just in that moment, say, okay, God, this is my first time. What am I trying to learn here? And so it's the progressive sanctification that I was talking about on Sunday, I think is that continues. I think it's still happening in your life, right?
Yes, absolutely. You never arrive. You arrive when he calls you and you're in heaven. You won't be down here to know that you arrived. Yeah. You'll be up there. Yeah. You see? So you don't do that. It's a great relief if you truly believe that you know the person who can carry you through this life. There's nothing on your shoulders. Now, that doesn't mean the world doesn't throw things at you. That doesn't mean that sometimes you act foolish, that, meaning myself, that I act foolish. But I have a God who is willing to forgive me.
Yeah.
I have a God that I can go to. And I guarantee you, you don't make the same mistake time after time after time. Because that punishment, that discipline gets a little harder each time, you see. And you will find yourself in a bad way. And most people don't like to be hurt in any kind of way, whether you're talking about physically, financially, mentally, they don't want to be hurt.
That's right.
And so you learn that the Lord means business. And if he says do, you might as well get on with doing it. And if he says stop, then stop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the degrees from the same college all the way up to master's degrees and PhDs and what profession? What are we doing? Like what all these years, what were you doing?
Oh, my gracious.
Many things?
Yeah. I was... when I first started out, my little 16-year-old job was sewing. Because when you're from a large family, now this one sews, and she does all kinds of crafts. She thinks I don't know it, and she crochets.
Oh,
and
she does crochet.
Oh, yeah, she crochets nice sweaters. You see, you don't have to talk a lot. If you have eyes and ears, you can hear and see a lot. You know what I mean? So at any rate, and you know what skills people have, and eventually the Lord will use them. But my first job was a job for the 4-H. And I was sewing. I was a sewing instructor, and at 16. And I remember going to school with some material, with and a Millium lining was just coming out at the store. And so everybody was making aprons, and I bought my lining and some wool. And her name was Miss Prunette, was the teacher. Miss Prunette said, "Esther, what is that?" I said, "My mama said I had to make my coat, and you know, wearing a coat."
Yeah.
She looked at me, "We're making aprons." My mama said I had to make a coat, you know. Right. And she didn't realize that, you know, my mother, grandmother, and everybody, they could sew, you know. So we got the coat done, you know. And that was my very first job teaching other children how to sew. And then I've had jobs as cashiers in grocery stores, and people get mad and break a jar, a gallon of vinegar over it. And I've been in stores where this lady was going with that man's husband or the wife or something, and they were shooting guns, and I'm under the register, you know. But I needed to go to school. I had to make some money, you know, so you just kept on doing what you had to do.
You said you got your degree from the same school. Did you say the name of the school?
Oh, I'm sorry, the University of Buffalo.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, the University of Buffalo, yes. And I've had, you know, cashier jobs, all kinds of store jobs. And then I was director of the Cerebral Palsy Clinic for many years. And that was very interesting because you could do your speech. I started out as a speech therapist there and then worked my way up and did that for years. And then I went on, I taught at colleges. And I liked the college work and everything, but I kept looking, and I didn't see too many people who looked like me in class. And so I said, what? So then I said, well, let me go back down. So I went to the public school system and got a job there as a human resources director. So I said, well, actually, the first job I got there was affirmative action officer / support staff trainer.
Okay.
So I said, well, the foot's in the door.
Yeah, you go.
You know,
yeah,
I'll get in
there.
Get in there. Yeah. And so I did that for a while, and then as things opened and I applied for them. So when I got to the human resources part, it gave me the opportunity to help make some laws and to encourage the children. And I developed a program called Grow Your Own, where you would take like a PSA worker, because you had to have a four-year degree to do that, and then encourage them to go back to school to be teachers. So now I had a pool of minority students that I could say to the board, oh, here they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Yeah.
That's so that passion, like, from the going to school was all the way through.
Oh, yeah.
And this was early 30s. Late 20s by this time? Like,
oh, who knows age? I mean, I don't remember what
I'm just trying to put together the timeline. Well, that's probably where.
Yeah, that's probably where. Oh, I don't know where we were in the world because you know, I have a hard time keeping up with the world. You know, I know it's going to end, and I know there's floods and wars and, you know, all that stuff and everything.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah. And I say, see, you know, God told you, you know. And you minister to who you can minister to, that
that's
the
right.
Lord brings in front of your path. But
yeah,
I know some believers who worry about the world. I'm not.
I sometimes feel naive to things of the world because I'm the same with you. I don't pay attention to it. I agree.
And you're
with
still
you.
Living.
Still living.
Yeah, you're
living
all right.
Good too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Why cumber your mind with stuff that you
absolutely,
can't change?
Absolutely. So that's I didn't know that part. I didn't know that you had worked with the students trying to.
Oh yes.
I didn't know that part of the story.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Very
yes.
nice. And then you retired from your last thing you did was
in education. I was, you know, the human resources director at that point in time. And you can, you know, make rules and stuff like that.
Awesome.
So, And we were unique in that there were, I think, six unions that we had. Because in New York, you know, everything's a union.
Yeah.
You have to negotiate. Mm-hmm. So that was, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, enjoyed
so
it.
When you moved to Georgia, did life seem slower?
Life seemed different. Yeah. I'm living in Georgia now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it was slower. It was different. It was different. Yeah.
It just seems like New York is so fast-paced. Even when we were around Niagara Falls and different things, it was just everything is so fast-paced. And when I went a couple of months ago, well, now it's a lot of months ago, but my brother went, it was just so busy. And, you know, Georgia just seems a lot more.
It's a different pace. That's really what it is.
Yeah.
And because of that, I never sought a teaching position down here because I knew I'd be fired. expectations may be perceived differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the intent is still there, but so it's easier just to tutor. You know, you can do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So how did faith play into from that freshman year of college through all these degrees and this passion for students and going through the school system, all this influence you had, your faith and all that. I mean,
well,
I know the answer, but
yeah, the I think again the answer is, I can only do what he was directing me to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was when it was successful, the credit went back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I could tell students, you know, that you know you need to know the Lord. The Lord is the one who helps you.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the remediation classes, you can do such and such and such, but your life has to have the Lord in it. You have to know this person. And you can't be ashamed to introduce and to tell people that you know the Lord. I mean, I'm not just talking children, I'm talking about fellow staff members too. I've had some incidences where someone would try to use the Lord, well, they would use the Lord's name in vain, and you have to call them on it.
Oh, yeah.
And when you do, they have a respect for you. And they know that the God that you're serving means something to you. Now, it might not mean, but they begin to, you know, change a little bit. Yeah.
I think what I've learned about you and know about you is that you are firm in your beliefs and not afraid to voice your opinion about certain things. We've told on the podcast before about I've been called out by you before, and it was good call out. That was like a growing moment that I, for like, you know, it was a moment in my life where I was like, you know what, she's 100% right. Like, I'm not right. And it was like, it made me start looking around as I do different things now and not look for, because the thing we had, we were talking about was no one being baptized for that year. I don't remember if it was 2020 or 2021 and being saved that year.
Yes,
I said,
that's
no
what
one's
you
been
said.
Saved
you're
this
not
year.
Say, yeah.
I said, we got to pray for it, and we got to make sure we're evangelizing. And you're like, how do you know that? And I'm like, well, no one was baptized. And you're like, and? Like,
yeah.
And?
Yeah.
That doesn't save you. And I was like, you know what? That's right. And so now a lot of the things I do, I'm trying to get that mindset that you are so clearly explaining. I'm offering what God has already given me, and God has offered to you.
Yes.
Do with it what you may.
Mm-hmm.
And just step away.
That's right. he does not have an application out for co-gods, you know, or, you know, it just doesn't happen that way. But if we live our life, so I have a sister who this particular sister is a pharmacist, and there was a fellow pharmacist, and you know, and so he decided that he was going to tell her that he liked her, and she looked at him and she said, no, you don't like me, you like the Christ in me. I thought, wow, that's a movie, you know. You know. But and this was years ago, I mean, because she was in pharmacy school when this happened. And I thought, boy, to be able to say that, you know, that concept that, no, you don't, you like the Christ in me, shows that you have that deep faith in God, and that you can see what he's doing, and you're letting him work out himself in you. Yeah.
Amen. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Sandy's the one word commenter tonight. Awesome. That's great.
I mean, I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's rare we get to like sit and have a chat because, you know, life. But so I'll use this opportunity to just ask you some questions, because why not, right?
Right.
But I know, like, at Mount Zion here, we have a pretty unique, like, we have so many different generations of people that go here, very diverse. So, you know, you say you like, you love people, you love talking, you love communicating. Any advice or words of wisdom on how to bridge the gap between those generations?
I think you start with what is not the gap. If we all say that we love the Lord, you understand, then that's where we started from. Now, I cannot bebop with the little kids. I know Little Shark, or what's the shark song?
Baby Shark.
Yeah, Baby Shark. Yeah. You see, I don't even know it. And as we age, because I talk to some seniors in this church here too, and I say, well, we can't do everything that we did in the past, but as you age, you don't need to do. You know, I've done, since I've been here, 5 peach tree races. I don't have to do the peach tree again. I did it. It was nice and everything else, but I can still walk. You see what I'm trying to say? And so when you talk about bridging the gap, sometimes it's hard for us to understand, okay, I'm 30 and I'm trying to reach Esther, who's 77, but there's a gap. Well, there is no gap if we start with the word, you know. Well, when do you do your Bible study? Well, would you pray for me for this? Well, just little things, you understand? We're not trying to hang out, you know, and, you know, it will develop into that as you mature. You preach sometimes on that 3-strand cord, according to the word, it's never broken. Do you realize if we took a senior, a middle-aged person, and a teenager, how you'd have that growth? You know, it would do that way. But most of the time, and I'm not talking about just Mount Zion, I'm talking about in life in general. Most of the time, seniors are here, young folk are here, and you know. And so we forget that cord, you know. But focus on the things and bridge on the things that you can do. Now, like, I can't play pickleball, but when I get back to being able to come out, I can go out and support somebody who plays it. You see what I'm trying to say? You have just as much fun from the bleachers as you would have watching me fall on the pickleball court, you know. So
I saw that happen to somebody.
Yeah. Oh, see there? See there? Yeah.
I've seen, you've been very active. You're a bike rider, so don't act like you don't have any skills. You got athletic skills in there.
Yes. I ride a bike sitting on a seat straight up with the handlebars. I'm not hunched over, but I can ride, and I can ride, you know, far.
Yeah.
But so it's those things that you begin to, like I noticed in the Sunday Bulletin that there's a hike coming up on May something. And I said, now see, I don't know if that's a hike, you know, over rocks and on your knees and stuff like that, or if that's a walk hike or what. But those are things that you begin to say to people, well, if you can't hike, meet us at the picnic table. You can set the picnic table or something like that, you know. The old lady once, she had a poem. I don't remember what the poem was, but I remember this. Use what you got. Now, that's all I remember. That's all I remember of the poem. Use what you got.
That's right.
And that's what we're saying. So if we can get out of our mind that there's a gap. No, there's really not a gap. It's just that, well, she drive too fast or she drive too slow, you know. Well, okay, don't drive. You know, do something that you know, you each take your own car and get there. You don't have to worry about it.
So you say it would start with, like, ourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one-on-one. Don't try. Because if one person gets one person, and see, a lot of times, I'm speaking to myself, because a lot of times I won't approach, if you can believe this, others, because I have this personality that either does one thing, either scares you to death. And I never understood why, but my mother said my face tells it all. You know, it either scares you to death, or I don't know what the alternative is. You have to wait for somebody to say, oh, she's okay.
Yeah.
You know, she's okay.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you've never scared me. I don't think that's ever came across.
Me
there
neither.
Are people that have scared me. You haven't been one of those people.
Well, I'm glad of that.
To me, you give off, every since I've ever met you, how long have we known each other now?
Well, ever since I came here, really, because
so
you were just going to school and wrote
so
a letter
to be
for
around
you.
11.
Yeah. 11, 12
okay,
years.
So yes, we've known each other for 13 years now. You've always came across to me as, is nurturing the right word? Like, you just have a lot to teach me that doesn't know,
oh,
and I need
Lord.
To know. Like, I need to know.
Oh, you make me have to tell you what they called me.
Okay. Okay.
Excuse me, family.
See, God brought it.
They called me Mother Hen.
See.
And I and I used to, you know, it didn't bother me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because that's what you're doing. You're trying to gather and then, you know, mm-hmm. spread out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would believe that, yeah. Knowing you now, Mother Hen. A lot of this that you've been talking about goes into what her question goes into also what is a huge part of the Christian life is just the relationship part, mm-hmm. the community part, being together. You fought harder battles than we're even fighting today, not only race, but being a female in those mm-hmm. days, I'm sure it was mm-hmm. a lot harder
oh, yeah.
than it is today mm-hmm. and all these things. So how do we... how do we keep that passion? I know we keep it on Jesus. I know we preaching the gospel. I know that. But you know, was it Isaiah that was the weeping that was so long? Jeremiah,
mm-hmm.
so long, and no
oh,
one
yeah,
ever
yeah, Jeremiah.
Came. And mm-hmm. we see people converted. We see people lives changed a lot more than they got to in that day. Just some words that would keep, because you've had to have perseverance, longevity, mm-hmm. more than I have. And so
yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, and I think the answer is simply, don't assume, don't presume. Either one is wrong, you mm-hmm. see. And we spoke about it a little bit earlier when we said somebody's path is their own path, mm-hmm. you understand? And we do not have the luxury of knowing the past or the future for ourselves, much less for them.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times we want to say, I can't believe they're doing that or something like mm-hmm. that. We can't do that judging. Just commit that person in that situation and your response to them to the Lord mm-hmm. and realize that God created everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He knows their path. We don't.
Yeah.
And we are trying to be co-gods when we try to say, well, that's, you know, we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't even know who's saved.
That's right.
I know if you say you saved, you know, I can say she's saved, but I don't know
that's
that.
Right. That's
so
right.
We think we do, but and learn it's just such a peace being content.
Yeah,
and that's something that you have to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The quote on Friday night that Wednesday night that we went over was godliness plus contentment equals great gain.
Great gain. Yeah. Great gain.
Yeah. When you hear that great gain, what comes to your mind? Great gain.
Everything. Goodness and well-being in all situations. Whether it's what you eat, what you wear, what your clothes, what your weight is, where you live, great gain in all things. Because you could be a lot worse. You could be in a lot worse situations. There are people who are in worse situations, and they're waiting for their great gain from the Lord. Where they are might be their great gain, but see, our little feeble eyes, oh, that's so sad. No, it's not so sad, you see? And so godliness with contentment.
Mm-hmm.
Godliness without contentment, you got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You got nothing.
Behavior.
And maybe not that. And with contentment, you don't get that unless you have godliness.
Yeah.
So you got to, great gain. It's plus equals.
Yeah.
It's math all over again.
Amen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think your testimony and story is a life of great gain from the perseverance from as a child to a teenager to striving through college and as a young mom and all those things. I mean, great gain is what I've witnessed from afar.
Praise the Lord.
Yeah.
I you know, that's encouraging because sometimes you wonder, you know, have I lost my mind? You know, but
I think that's the podcast we had a couple of weeks ago. Was like, are we annoying? Are we the ones that have lost our minds? Like, is everyone else the same ones? I'm like, no,
no, you haven't lost your mind. No, you haven't.
I think it goes well with the scripture that we went over this Sunday. I wanted to read it just so we're all on the same page. But this is what I believe. What your testimony and your story, all these things are evident at some point, and it was what Paul was telling the people in Colossae. saying these all these negative things over here, get rid of sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, all of that. He says, just get rid of all that because God has offered you this great thing in Jesus. And he said, since he has done that, put on your chosen, first of all, he said, you're God's chosen ones, you're holy and beloved, put on compassionate hearts, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. And he said, bearing with one another, and over all those things, he said, that we are to show love.
That's right.
Just the love part of it. And I think that that's not only our testimony together since we've known each other, but it was way before I knew you, and it's going to be way after you and I are neither one here. Yes. That love component that's going to keep carrying this gospel forward that we're so all in tune and striving for.
That's right.
It's like the passion of all of it.
That's right.
And so what else you got? Any other thoughts? Producer, any other questions for the mother hen?
Oh, Lord, I done it now.
Well, Esther is one of the only people at Mount Zion Baptist Church that know my middle name. Do you know my middle name? Could you rattle it off right now? No, you can't.
No, you said it before.
I've said it before, but when I was telling you that she's the only one that knows it, do you remember it? No, yeah, so we have this little thing. Like, when we got to Niagara Falls, all these people were going, Sister Jane this, and Sister Jane that, and Sister Jane this, and we're like, who is this Jane lady? Like, we don't even know, we don't know a Jane, and it was her. And so I said, well, who is this? And so Esther Jane is her name, and so I just started calling her Esther Jane just out of fun, because we're close, and so now she calls me Russell Joseph, and...
Joseph.
Yeah. So. yeah. And so I just think it's a cool little thing God did with us.
Yes.
Like our relationship is cool because of that and other things, but I just think that we have that, and you know, Sean's daughter calls me Rusty still, like when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, God is just like my name for some reason unites me and connects me with people. So very, very cool and cute. Mm-hmm. So Miss Esther, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank God.
Yeah,
and I would just add, love covers a multitude of sins. Mm. So just stick with the love.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So we appreciate your time. We'll continue legacy talks. We don't know who's next, whoever God puts on our heart. And we go out there. We do know this. Mount Zion is full of wisdom. There are people here that have walked with the Lord for many, many years and are the foundation, the shoulders that we're standing on. And one day we'll be that. And so we want to gain all that they... remember the gentleman said the other night, we were talking about in Corinthians, he said, all these things happened as examples so that you can... not make the same mistakes.
That's right.
You know, and so you want to live and you want to learn. And so like, subscribe, all those things. Again, thank you for joining us, Miss Esther.
My pleasure.
Will be back in a couple of weeks with the MZBC the podcast. I will request this for everyone listening. Lift up Emmanuel in your prayers. His family is going through a difficult time. And we just ask that you would pray for them through this time. And God has it under control. We have no doubts. And so until next time we meet again, stay prayed up.